I find I'm so excited I can barely sit still or hold a thought in my head. I think it's the excitement only a podcaster can feel. A podcaster at the start of a long journey whose conclusion is uncertain. I hope I can release all the episodes I have in queue. I hope to get more guests for this year. I hope the podcast does as well as it has done in my dreams. I hope.
You got 5 seconds to tell me where you buried the loot. Oh. Where's the loot?
I don't know who's got the loot. I don't know if anybody's got the loot.
I'm setting up a guy who's incredibly important to us who's gonna tell me where the loot is. Oh.
Where's the loot?
Hello, looters. Welcome to The Movie Loot, the podcast where we share the best, greatest, most entertaining, and or weirdest film that you could find. My name is Carlo, and I'll be officially closing our 2023 while sharing the loot today. This is episode 98, the closing loot, in which we will be talking about closing scenes and how important it is for a film to stick the landing, so to speak. For that, we will be joined again by Pete from the Middle Class Film Class podcast. If you listen to the podcast, you will remember we opened 2023 with him talking about opening scenes. So it seemed more than appropriate to bring him back to close this baby. But before that, let's talk a bit about our past episodes. We're still recovering from lengthy hiatus, which is why you're listening to our 2023 closing almost in February. But a couple of weeks ago, we released episode 96, The Found Footage Loot, where I had the honor of talking with one of the creators of the Blair Witch Project, Eduardo Sanchez, about his work and found footage films in general. We also released the November Loot, where I brought back friend and filmmaker Todd Sullivan to talk about the films we saw in November. So some great stuff to catch up with at The Movie Loot. Also, stay tuned for a whole bunch of episodes that are coming out now. So we're closing the door on 2023, but definitely not on the podcast. And to help me bolt that door down, let's meet with Pete for our closing loot. Let's go.
The closing loot.
Hello, looters. Welcome to The Movie Loot. This is our last official episode of 2023, and what best way to close our year than with an episode dedicated to closing scenes. And for that, we are joined once again by a great friend. We opened the year with him. We're closing the year with him. The man, the legend, the real Pete from Middle Class Film Class podcast. How are you doing, Pete?
Ooh, yeah. Oh, yeah. yeah, doing good, man. Doing good. You almost said my email address because my email address is the man, the Pete.
I think that's why I said it.
Yeah. What's up, man? Happy to be back, by the way.
No, man, I'm really glad to have you here. Pete, by having you here, I'm going against one of the things I never wanted to do on the show, which was to repeat guests more than once in a year or season, so to speak. But you asked for it. Yeah. So you got it.
It's fitting. Yeah, we're gonna bookend this year, baby.
Yeah, I had exactly that same word written. I said, to be honest, I really like the idea of having this bookend with you. You know, started with you, end with you. So it felt like real proper closure.
Cool.
And it's 2024 also. So because if there's one thing that this podcast has had is a rough ending. Speaking of closures and ending, but that's what we want to close it up. Be gone with it. And who better to help me exorcise these demons than Pete?
That's right. We'll do it. We'll make this sure this house is clean by the end of this episode.
I'll tell you, this is one of the most haphazardly assembled episodes that I've done. So let's see if I stick the landing or not. But before we dive into the topic, before we close the door with our closing scenes, let's talk about you and Middle Class Film Class podcast. How's the show doing?
Oh, it's good, man. Yeah, we're past like the four and a half year. We're at the about 4.5 year mark on the show. And we almost have figured out what we're doing at this point.
Well, I commend you because I'm still trying to figure out what the hell I'm doing.
Yeah, we moved into a new phase in the show where we're spending a lot of time with video production. And, you know, the show is, for those who don't listen or haven't heard of the show, it's we record twice a week. We have every Monday is an episode we call Gab and Chatter, which is like just conversation, movie news of the week, and then we give our streaming recommendations from all three of us, Joseph and Tyler and myself. And then on every Wednesday, we do a deep dive movie review into a movie of our choice or the Patreon member's choice. So it's a pretty fun show. It's meant to be, you know, more comedy based. You know, we cover the gamut of movies and weird, you know, news topics of the week. But it's all done with, you know, a funny twist to it, and we don't take it very seriously. And the three of us are good friends in real life, so we hope that the conversation comes across as genuine, even if
they're funny guys.
Yeah, hey, funny guys. And sometimes I know it might seem like mommy and daddy are fighting, but it's because we're very good friends in real life, and you know, the banter comes off as very real because it is.
I think I don't remember if I asked this in the opening Loot episode, but how long have you known each other?
Joseph and I have been friends for probably almost 8 years now. He was good friends with my girlfriend. They went to college together. So when I first started dating her,
he worked with you, right?
Tyler worked with me. Tyler actually,
yeah.
I actually hired Tyler when I used to run a body shop, and I hired him as an employee. And I was like, man, this guy's weird. I kind of like him. And after he was transferred over to another store, and we were no longer employee
boss and employee.
Yeah, I was like, hey, come over to my house for a Halloween party, and that was he never left.
He's still there in the corner somewhere.
Yeah. It's like when at the last episode of Seinfeld, when Kramer comes in and asks to borrow something, and he goes, yeah, come in anytime you want. And he goes, oh, okay. And it's like, I've invited this vampire to my life.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but yeah, the show now is moving into YouTube production, and we have a very active YouTube channel where we upload shorts every day of the week, and videos are, I think, uploaded 5 days a week or something like that. So there's a lot of effort going into that, and it's really fun and engaging, and we're getting a completely different audience from the YouTube.
Seems like a lot of people a lot of friend podcasters are moving into YouTube and doing video as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, we got some webcams. We didn't like the quality. We upgraded the webcams. We didn't like the background. We upgraded the back lighting. We didn't like the front lighting. We upgraded the front lighting. And it's like we're picking away at this. And in January of 2023, we officially started a Patreon. And we had our diehard listeners all joined up really early on. And once we were able to kind of reach an equilibrium of, you know, hosting fees and all this stuff, we have this now are able to invest into good quality equipment and better sound. So better mics are probably on the way in the future. But as it stands, we have the equipment to make a good YouTube presence, and Joseph has the know-how to make a good video. So we upload the full, complete, unedited episodes twice a week, just a raw video dump. And then we do more produced content, once or twice a week on top of that. So the editing aspect of it is something that I used to be able to do when I was in high school, and now it's gotten so complicated. I lost that touch a long time ago. So I leave that 100% to Joseph.
But the next step, middle class film class. The movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, who knows? No, but it's a great show. I recommend everybody to listen. Like I said, they're funny guys. It's a fun show. It's fun and with good insight. I think I've said that to you a couple of times. You know that these guys know what they're talking about, even if they're not entirely serious about it. So I definitely recommend everybody to check out Middle Class Film Class.
Thanks, buddy.
And make sure to check out the trivia episodes. What was up with the trivia episodes?
Yeah, we did a limited trivia tournament that I'm a trivia hound. I love trivia. All my podcast feed, my personal podcast listening experience is exclusively movie stuff and trivia. So I decided to, and we play games on the show. We'll do small segments where it's me quizzing Joseph and Tyler, or Joseph quizzing two of us or whatever. So I wanted to make one that was just balls out trivia, movie trivia. And I enlisted the help of, I think it was like 24. No, it was more than that. It was four contestants per episode. And we had six. It was 24 contestants.
Yeah.
And then we had multiple layers and multiple tournaments. And it was a three bracket tournament, and it was single elimination. And each episode had four independent movie podcast hosts competing against each other. And then you get knocked out or you move on to the next round. And you made it all the way to the end. It was you and Stu head to head. And if you want to find out how that turned out, you have to listen to the tournament. But that was a limited run that is probably not going to happen again, because each episode, the amount of questions that was built into that was like 10 pages of questions and answers and categories and sound added in live and all that kind of stuff.
I definitely recommend everyone to check out those episodes that ran earlier last year, right?
Yeah, it was somewhere in June, May, June, something like that.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. And if people are like you, trivia hounds, and enjoy movie trivia, I'm sure you're going to have a lot of fun with it. I really enjoyed it. Even the episodes that I wasn't in. I enjoyed the episodes that I wasn't in.
Yeah. And I will say this, don't go into it expecting, you know, something that you're going to, you know, it's a cakewalk. It's this Jeopardy level questions.
No, no, it's killer. He was cutthroat. He wasn't sugarcoat any questions. No, it's a killer.
Yeah. And we just like we do the show live, it's all done as if it's like a radio show. The trivia show is done live too.
Yeah. So do you see any closing in the horizon for the middle class film class, or plans to continue as long as you can?
We don't really have any, like, we every once in a while we'll stop and, you know, our group chat and the three of us will like, how you guys liking? Are you having fun still? Are we enjoying ourselves? Is it too much to dedicate this much time every week or whatever to the show? Yeah, the Apple does this. you do the thumbs up.
What check the this heck?
Out. Yeah, watch this. Hey.
People are not seeing this, but he has production values have really gone up. He's doing a lot of video stuff that you can't see.
Yeah, we didn't know what it was, but it's apparently the Apple's operating system. So when you make hand gestures and stuff with your hands, it does little things on the screen. But no, we have no plan on closing anytime soon. You know, last time we did a State of the Union address amongst ourselves, it was kind of like, yeah, we're having a good time. You know, let's push the boundaries. Let's start doing YouTube. Let's start doing this. Let's start doing that. So, you know, depending on how much time each one of us have throughout the week, we may not all be able to be involved with it. Like Tyler's just not spending as much time. He's not as involved in the YouTube, but that's just because his job doesn't allow it. And, you know, so, but the podcast is still going, and we're going to keep going as long as they'll allow us.
I think that's important for anything that we do in life. I mean, as long as you're having fun, we're having fun, everybody's having fun, why not keep doing it? So I think that's an important thing.
Absolutely.
But you know what has closing? Films. And that's what we're going to talk about. So let's head out into our topic of what I've dubbed the closing talk. And we're going to talk, like I said, about closing scenes in movies, specifically those last, say, 10, 20 minutes, 30 minutes about films, whether they worked or they didn't work. So we're going to talk a bit about everything that we started, like I said, the year talking about opening scenes also with Pete. And we talk about the importance of starting a movie with the right food to establish the proper atmosphere and the proper mood to continue the film. But how important is this closing of the film? Like I said, let's say the last 10 or 20 minutes, what would you say? How important is that to the overall film?
Well, I think that the closing of the film is probably more important to the legacy of the film. At least in my memory of looking back on some of my favorite movies, the ones that really end with a bang, as soon as I'm done with it and the credits roll and I'm sitting back and I'm getting ready to write my review on Letterboxd, I'm thinking, I'm like, wow, God, it's still so good. You know, that ending every time just gets you like, I'm not going to go through, you know, I'll just say one of the classics, Fight Club. You know,
okay, yeah, that's a good one.
Iconic final scene. It's stuck in people's head. You can't hear "Where's My Mind" without by the Pixies without thinking of that scene.
Where is my mind?
Yeah, and it's like it encapsulates. Sometimes puts a nice little bow on the end of a movie that you might have already liked, or maybe didn't like so much, and just finally gives you that one last push to, you know, solidify it in your memory. So, you know, it is definitely has its a very important thing to nail.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with you, because that final punch, it really sticks with you. A film that opens with the right food, but then doesn't do anything else, you might forget with time, or you will probably remember, oh yeah, I remember that good opening, but that's about it. But a film that packs that punch in the end kind of sticks with you as a whole more than a film with a great opening. So in that line, what do you value more? A film that has a great opening that can't quite get to the same level afterwards, or a film that really sticks the landing and lets you go like, wow. For example, let's say a film is consistently good, but it doesn't necessarily stick the landing, or maybe say, the ending was meh, or a film that might be kind of mediocre all the way. Not bad, but kind of mediocre or just meh, but then manages to somehow wow you in the end.
I think the having a stronger opening for me is the bigger hook. And I think back on, I have a longer list of memorable openings than I do of memorable endings. I'll give you an example. Glengarry Glen Ross, one of the greatest openings of any scene ever. And I would be remiss if I said that if I left it off of my opening loot, I don't know. I can't remember now because it was a year ago.
Yeah, we mentioned it. Yeah. I don't remember if it was in any of our specific loots. I think it was in mine. I don't remember. But at least I'm pretty sure we mentioned it.
Yeah, that movie is, it's a great movie. You know, it's not, I don't think it's an amazing movie. I don't think it's an all-time classic. But that scene will forever be one of the greatest scenes of all time in general for me. Dialogue-based scenes, you know. The endings of a lot of movies, they almost always tie into the rest of the movie, but I can think about the Glengarry Glen Ross opening scene alone. And I will put it on sometimes, watch the first, you know, 15 minutes of the movie and then just turn it off. You know, you never do that with the endings.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's an I think I agree with you. And I think I said that with the opening loot. I think I'm known myself to just look for random opening scenes on YouTube just to watch. I like to watch this again, this 5 minutes or something. But then again, I think I do it. I might do it also with endings. It's just good scenes.
Yeah.
There's a term that I think I mentioned in the opening loot that's called a serial position effect, which means that people remember what comes first and last, not what occurs in the middle. And I think that's why maybe intentionally or not intentionally, but directors and filmmakers in general try to start with a bang or end with a bang or both. I think there was even a quote, a famous quote. I don't remember if it was Alfred Hitchcock or someone who said something to that effect. So I think it's definitely, those two parts are definitely important. But I think the ending, as far as I'm concerned, I think it's more important. I really enjoy, I don't want to limit the conversation just to that, but I really enjoy great twists in the end, great reveals that make me go like, what? I really enjoy those kind of films, and I think you're going to see that in some of my choices later. But I think that final punch, it really gets to me.
Nice.
We're going to talk later about great closing scenes, but let's talk about the ones that didn't quite stick the landing. Do you remember one film that you thought, you know, this film is good, but they botched the ending, or, you know, this film, they didn't really quite land properly?
Well, we just did a review on the show of this weird oddity movie from 1989 called Robot Jocks with the X, J-O-X. And it was basically a precursor to Pacific Rim, where it was directed by Stuart Gordon. So he did The Reanimator, he did From Beyond.
Yeah.
And it's a dystopian future 30 years after a nuclear holocaust has wiped out most of the Earth. And the Earth is divided into two countries, what would essentially be America and what would essentially be Russia. And the way that they settle their land disputes is, you know, someone says, hey, I want Alaska. And they go, okay, let's fight our robots over it. And they have these giant, that's how you do it, as one is what to do. So they have these like Gundam wing size robots that fight each other on a battlefield sanctioned. And there's like referees and stuff. And although it wasn't a great movie, it was one of the worst endings I'd ever seen in my life, because hey, spoiler, it's for anybody who doesn't want to ruin this movie you've never heard of before, but the two main fighting robot, the pilots, exit their robot suits through the course of the final fight, and they are on the battlefield, and they're going to fight hand-to-hand combat, and one of them has a killing blow, and he says, we don't have to do it, we can live, and they both go, all right, and they give a thumbs up hand, like a thumbs up, like fist bump, and the camera zooms in on it, and it rolls credit. Like there's no character motivation for why they would change their mind. The bad guy would change his mind. Literally nothing. And I was absolutely gobsmacked when I saw that. And it was a fan pick. It was a Patreon pick. And I was like, what the hell is this?
Everything was solved. Easy. Yeah. I got to show that film to my kids so they stop fighting each other.
Sure, really. I mean, if you were 6 or 7, you could probably, you know, infer something from it. But sure, it looked like they ran out of budget and time. And they just said, let's just film a close-up of them giving a fist bump with a thumbs up.
You know, now that you mention it, it doesn't necessarily fit the question that I was asking, but I was just reminded by what you were saying. But you've seen They Live, right? John Carpenter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's a film that you can feel that towards the ending, they kind of ran out of budget, because the ending feels really, really abridged. I still like it. So that's why I said that it doesn't necessarily fit the question that I was asking.
Yeah.
But I was just reminded that I think that with a bigger budget or more resources, maybe that ending would have been way better, and maybe the film could have been seen in a maybe better light. Not that it's seen, but you know, that's a cult classic and everybody loves it. But you know, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think the ending of The Dark Knight a little bit is disappointing because the context of Heath Ledger already having been slain at that point, you know, you're kind of like, okay, what are they going to do with this? And the Joker just kind of goes, oh, yeah, you know, this and that. And they didn't kind of kill the Joker and he had the opportunity. And there's a lot of context stuff wrapped up there. And you're like, they could do something more with this character. And the real life connotation of what happened is almost, you know, it's disappointing in its own right. That one comes to mind. I don't consider that a bad ending, but just the way it ends, you're like, it's such a good movie, and it just kind of stops, you know?
Well, oh man, you're going to get me started with The Dark Knight, but...
All right, let's do it.
Oh man, I have issues with that film. I love Heath Ledger's performance. I think it's one of the best performances I've seen. Uh-huh. Villain performances and overall performances. But I have issues with the last act. And I think that once you get the Joker out of the picture, the whole two-faced thing feels so rushed. And I really don't like that last act. And it pretty much thinks the film like two or three notches for me. It's so rushed. So I've always said that I think that Aaron Eckhart is great in the film. And I think he deserved like a third film. He deserved to be the villain, the proper villain of the third film.
I loved his makeup too, by the way. I know it was mostly CG, but still that was killer.
Looks great, man. And considering how I'm not a huge fan of The Dark Knight Rises either, but I think that maybe I know that Nolan probably wanted to close like a thematic circle of heroes becoming the villains and villains becoming the heroes, whatnot. But I think they really should have left the whole Two-Face thing for a third film.
Yeah, it's interesting. I never thought about it in terms of that, but I will say that The Dark Knight Rises third act turns into, it's one of the worst. Every time I watch that movie, it gets worse for me.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan. I've seen it like once or twice, and I'm not a big fan. I don't hate it, but I'm not a big fan.
Yeah.
One that always comes to mind when I ask this question, and this question kind of comes often on Twitter, like, what film watches the ending? And one that comes always to mind is Hot Tension or High Tension. Have you seen it? Horror film from Alexander Aja?
Yes. I watched it last year, actually 2 years ago now, 2022. Yeah. In a marathon of unfortunate movies that I called my Depress Fest. And it was Irreversible. And what's the one where the girl gets flayed to death in the basement? Martyrs. It was Martyrs.
Oh, Martyrs. Yeah, Martyrs.
And Hot Tension. I think there might have been a fourth one, but those are the three that I watched back to back in one day. And by the time I got, it was the other one, the fourth one was Inside. Also another French extreme horror movie with a...
I haven't seen that one.
Oh, it's really good. It's one of the bloodiest movies literally I've ever seen in my life. And it's really fun. But yeah, Hot Tension did not land on me really at all. I didn't like it.
Not at all, because I liked it. But when the twist comes, let me just make a disclaimer. Obviously, we're talking about closing scenes, or we're definitely going to spoil a lot spoilers. Of films. So if we mention a film and you haven't seen it and you don't want to get it spoiled, just try to skip ahead a couple of seconds or whatnot to see if we've already finished talking about it. But once the twist comes up, it really doesn't make any sense for me how the twist or the reveal mixes with what we've already seen. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you see this film that has changed point of view a couple of times from the main girl to the friend and to other people, and then this reveal comes, it really doesn't mix up. It doesn't add up. That first, and it also felt in a way just like a twist for the sake of having a twist.
Sure. Like they ended, they're like, well, what if this happened? But they didn't do enough writing on the front half to justify the twist. Yeah, I agree. And that's pretty much most of the feedback I've heard from that movie when people were saying, oh, you should go add this to your Depressed Fest. And I watched it and I was like, I mean, I already wasn't having a great time with it. So when it happened, I'm like, yeah, okay, par for the course, not great. You know, I'm in the minority though, I think, for that. But Irreversible is objectively a really well-made movie that is almost insufferable to watch.
I love it.
Yeah, and The Martyrs, it was fantastic. Never want to watch it again.
Yeah.
But Martyrs was legitimately a good movie.
Yeah.
Also with some amazing practical effects and some amazingly repulsive ideas in it. And then the greater idea of why they're doing it all was an interesting concept I never even thought to breach, you know, ever in my life. And I was like, ooh, that's pretty cool, you know? So I think maybe pairing it up with some more well-done and deeper, more meaningful movies, and then watching Hot Tension is just literally like a slash fest with a quote unquote twist at the end. You're like, ooh, okay.
Yeah, I really like those two, Martyrs and irreversible. But again, like I said, I haven't seen them again, and I don't know if I'll ever see them again.
That's a one and done.
Yeah,
I'm taking submissions for Depressed Best 2.0. I know Dear Zachary is going to be on there. I've heard that's a hard watch. I haven't either.
Have you seen, I don't want to deviate, but have you seen Good Night Mommy? It's a foreign film. Good Night Mommy.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, it's good. I like that reveal on that one.
Yeah, it really worked for me. It was predictable. I'm now actually realizing that it does fit the topic, but
yeah, if you've seen enough movies in your life, if you're a movie appreciator,
yeah,
you'll see it coming. But kind of a standard person watching it would go, "Oh wow, that's wild," you know?
Yeah, I think it's predictable, but it worked. The way that it ended, I thought it was still creepy, eerie, effective, and it worked for me. Even though I saw the twist coming 5 minutes into the film,
I even liked the remake. I mean, I know it gets kind of crapped on, but I thought it was perfectly fine.
Seen it. Another one that also comes to mind when we talk about this is, I don't know if you've seen it, but have you seen Suspicion from Hitchcock?
No, I haven't seen a ton of Hitchcock.
Oh, yeah. This is another one that always the people come up with it when this topic comes, because I think it was, I really don't remember, but I think it was like the studio forced Hitchcock to change the ending. And that's also a common denominator in a lot of these cases where the film really doesn't stick the landing. The film is about this woman that gets married to this man, and she starts thinking that the husband, played by Cary Grant, is trying to kill her. And there's all this paranoia. Is he or isn't he trying to kill her? And then Hitchcock manages to hold that tension right until the very last scene. There's a very iconic scene. Maybe you've seen that scene in videos or whatnot, where he's bringing a glass of milk to her and he's going up the stairs. And Hitchcock did a nice trick where he put something glowing inside the glass of milk, so even though he's coming up the stairs in the dark, you can see the glow in the milk, and you're wondering,
that's
is
really
it
cool.
poison or
oh wow.
So you get that tension, and what's gonna happen, is he gonna kill her? But then towards the end, they drop the ball and she flees or something. I don't remember, I haven't seen it in a while, but he goes, purses her and say, "No, I really love you." And he wasn't really trying to kill her.
Okay.
So it feels very anticlimactic and very studio forced.
Is the original ending, does he murder her through the milk?
Yeah, it's supposed to be. I think the original ending was supposed to be ambiguous, or he was supposed to be the murderer. But
that's how I want to go, by the way. Poison
yeah.
milk.
But yeah. I'm a milk freak, so yeah, I'm
Are
like
really?
Anton Chigurh. Yeah, I'm
hey,
like
me
Anton
too.
Chigurh drinking from the bottle.
Do you ever have milk over ice?
No, I like it cold. I stick the gallon in the freezer and leave it for a while. And
in the
then,
freezer? Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
You're blowing my mind right here. Yeah, every once in a while, I'll put up milk over ice, already cold milk over ice, and it changes the whole thing. The whole experience is different.
See, so you want to get some ideas and recipes for cold milk, then you better stay tuned to the Movie Loot.
I know.
No, but the film, that ending really stinks the film for me. And it's actually, I have it near the bottom of my Hitchcock list. And I've seen like 39 Hitchcock films. So
yeah, you've almost got the whole catalog.
It really ruined the film for me. So yeah. So we're definitely going to talk more about closing scenes when we head into our closing loot. But before going out that door, let's close out this section of the episode with a game that I'm calling the closing quote game.
Ooh,
back in
okay.
January 2023, we did the opening quote game. So why not close it out with the closing quotes? So what I'm going to do is that I'm going to act a quote from a closing scene of a film and let you guess what film it is from. What do you say?
Got it. Go for it. Let's do it.
Okay. Let's see. I'm going to start with an easy one.
Okay.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88. Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
That's a tough one. What can that be? That's Back to the Future.
Yes. Let's start ramping up the difficulty level, but this shouldn't be that hard either. Well, Denim, the airplanes got him. Oh, no. It wasn't the airplanes. It was Beauty killed the beast.
Oh, that is King Kong.
Yep. The original or the
I don't think in the remake they said the airplanes thing, but they definitely said 'twas Beauty killed the beast.
Yes. Okay, let's keep ramping up the difficulty level.
All right.
But you don't understand, Osgood. Oh, I'm a man. Well, nobody's perfect.
Oh gosh, that's a tough one. Osgood. Osgood is a character's name. I'm a man, but nobody's perfect. Oh, Some Like a Hot.
Yep, you got it.
Yes. Love that. Love that movie.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Okay, let's go with... Okay. Good shot. Okay, he's dead. Let's go get him. That's another one for the fire.
Good shot. Let's go get him. Another one for the fire. Is this Night of the Living Dead?
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Poor Ben.
Sad ending, yeah.
Yep. Okay, let's go with.
I had to think about those last two.
No. Okay, I'm gonna go down to another easy one, but I want to do this one. This is
Okay.
gonna be really easy.
All right.
I do wish we could chat longer, but I'm having an old friend for dinner. Goodbye, Dr.
Oh God.
Lecter. Dr. Lecter. Dr. Lecter.
That's the original Silence of the Lambs, not none of the sequels.
Yeah. Okay, let's go high again in the difficulty level.
Okay.
Mediocrities everywhere. I absolve you. I absolve you. I absolve you. I absolve you.
Ooh, mediocrities everywhere. I absolve you. This is the final quote. I'm just gonna go out on a limb and pick a movie I haven't seen before. Spartacus? No, what is it?
Amadeus.
Oh gosh. I love that movie too. Oh yeah, he's in the nut house.
Yes.
Oh God, yeah. Freaking Soliari.
Mr. F. Murray Abraham.
Yeah. I like the line in Last Action Hero when the kid is F. Murray Abrams is in the movie playing a character and he goes, "Don't trust that guy, he's a bad guy. He killed Mozart."
I haven't seen Last Action Hero.
Oh man, it's so fun.
I've heard, that film back in the day went way over the head of most people, as far as I've read, because I don't think it was a hit. So I think that's why I didn't see it back then. But I've heard great things about it in the last couple of years. A lot of people are talking good things about it, and I should probably see it.
I freaking love that movie, and it's like it fits to me. It fits in the vein of like Hook, where it is cheesy and it is campy and it is mostly a kids movie. But as a whole, it is, I mean, it's undeniable that it's good. I don't know why people hate on Hook. That's a great movie, so.
Yeah, I think that back in the day, people didn't really understand the whole meta thing or something, but I
Could be
remember
ahead of
you.
its time. Yeah,
Yeah,
it's a fun movie. It's John McTiernan, you know.
yeah. Okay, I have a couple more. Okay, let's go with this one. You see, this is my life. It will always be nothing else. It's us and the cameras and those wonderful people out there in the dark. All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
I didn't get it till the very end. That's nice. I love that. Good acting. This is Sunset Boulevard. First time watching me this last past year.
Really, you liked it?
Oh, I loved it. Five
Yeah,
stars. Great movie.
it's great. I definitely love it. One of my favorite film was.
She's an
Okay.
all-time character right there, that character.
Yeah. Okay, just I think I'll have two more.
Okay.
Okay, this might be another easy one. I'll go home and I'll think of some way to get him back. After all, tomorrow is another day.
Oh gosh. Ooh. Oh, Gone with the Wind?
Gone with the Wind. Yes, it is.
Hey, all right.
Before going to the last one, I'm going to share something that my friend Tom said, and Tom is one of my listeners. And when I asked on Twitter for people to share their favorite, in this case, favorite closing scenes or closing lines, and he said, if only Gone with the Wind would have ended with the immortal line, "Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn," that would have been my choice. Instead, they give it to Scarlett to yammer on about Tara and Hope. What a mistake. This is what comes after.
Oh, okay.
What's his name? Red Butler leaves her,
Yeah.
and she goes ramming out. I'm gonna find him again and get him again. Yeah.
The end of the first act, I think, is what I was thinking of. It's like, you know, God is my witness, I'll never be hungry again. You know, that's
That's
the end
another
of the
big
first.
scene for her. Yeah.
That's the end of the right before the intermission, I think, right?
Yes. They
Okay.
were. She's right beside the tree with the sunset in the back, and a great shot.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go with the last one. Probably another easy one, but I'm gonna say it anyway. And in the dream, I knew that he was going on ahead. He was fixing to make a fire somewhere out there in all the dark and all that cold. And I knew that whenever I got there, he'd be there. And then I woke up.
Oh, ooh. That's a tough one. Is this Apocalypse Now?
Nope. One of the most infuriating endings for a lot of people, not me.
Okay, what is it?
No Country for Old Men.
Got it. Yeah. Yeah. I like the ending to that. I don't remember that line, though. That's Tommy Lee, right?
Yeah, Tommy Lee, at Tom Bell, the sheriff, sharing stories, his dreams about after retiring.
Sitting at the coffee table talking to his wife.
Yeah. Screen goes to black and audience is rioting.
Yeah, really? Boo! I love that.
I saw it in theaters. I loved it. And I still love it. I think it's great. But I think I remember hearing a lot of people groaning and sighing at that end.
That's so funny.
Okay. You did really good. I think you only missed one.
I miss No Country and I miss Amadeus.
I'll
kick myself later for that. Amadeus. I love that movie.
No, you did good.
Thanks, buddy.
So it's time for a closing loop, the moment where we take turns in sharing our top five closing scenes from any film or just five closing scenes you want to put the spotlight on. So let's close this up. We'll start with your number five and we'll take turns until we reach our number one. I still don't know what my five will be. I have a list and I'm going to stick my hand in that list and just take whatever comes.
I have some honorable mentions. I won't try not to mention them throughout this whole thing. They just didn't quite fit the bill. And my criteria for picking this was it has to be a scene, not like the last four or five scenes together, really just the one scene.
Okay.
And I'm going to go with my number five is the newest addition to the collection. And I don't know if it will rise up later in the ranks, but I just saw this and I was blown away by the final scene. This is Saltburn, the final scene, which is a small spoiler. So skip ahead 30 seconds if you don't want it spoiled. But Barry Keoghan's character of Ollie dancing naked through Saltburn. It's a long uncut shot and it is very, as people would say, it's a daring shot because he is buck naked. It is a long uncut shot through this beautiful estate and he is dancing. And what happens at the final bit and he puts something on top. And I know I can tell that you haven't seen it yet, Carlos.
No, so I haven't seen it.
I'll leave this very vague, but he puts something on top of this toy. The thing on top of the toy and the toy is referenced earlier in the movie. And when it happens, it kind of recontextualizes all of, you know, the stuff that you saw before. And it really kind of puts a full view of what had happened. And it was beautiful, shocking, and just very, very surprising. So loved that. This is going to be one I pick up on 4K. So when I rewatch it again, we'll see if it raises even higher.
You got me scared for a bit there when you said he's buck naked and it's very long.
The shot is long and, I'll just leave it. You can make your own inferences, but I might be apt to dance naked through a town too if I look like Barry Keoghan. Let's just say that.
Well, speaking of the Bass Pro Shop guy,
we got
two ends of the spectrum.
I know, the poor soul.
Oh, and God bless him.
Lord bless him. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'm kind of going with I'm trying to go with your same frame of mind about trying to pick not just, the last 30 minutes of the film, try to just pick the final scene. And I'm going to go with this one first. I'm going to go with Melancholia. Have you seen it?
Yes, love that movie.
Lars von Trier. This is one of the most haunting films I've seen. And that ending really, it has stuck with me, something fierce. That image of the three main characters in the top of the hill and just this thing coming towards them and the way both characters, or three characters if we include the kid, are reacting to what's happening, which pretty much puts in perspective the theme of the film. You know, this woman that is going through this severe depression and doesn't know how to handle it properly versus her sister. I think it's her sister, best friend. I don't remember. And she seems to be the one that's more well put and more quote unquote sane. Mm-hmm. And yet in the end, in those final moments, those roles are completely reversed because the one that has just accepted her fate and, you know, this is the way we're going and that's it. And the other one is just uncontrollably freak out about what's coming. It's just a gorgeous scene and
good pick,
again, haunting, and one that I'm getting goosebumps, hair is rising in the back of my neck because it's a really haunting scene. I love it. Melancholia.
Yeah, the whole movie is great. And I don't even think it's that depressing of a movie. It deals with depression, but if you're a person who's been affected by depression or you know someone in your life who you're close with who has, it's a topic that people don't need to be afraid to, you know, immerse themselves in, because there are people that deal with it like every day and they can't escape it. You're just going in for 2 hours and then you can go back to your life like normal. So, you know, just suck it up and just go dive in.
Yeah, but I think in a weird way, it is, like you say, a more reassuring film than it is a film, you know, to sink you deeper into depression. I mean,
I agree.
The world is ending, whatnot. But I think there's that weird reassurance that, you know, there's things you can't control, or sometimes you just gotta accept and live your life, because that's what the characters do in that final act or so. You see, like I said, that shift in how these two characters are behaving themselves. And I think it's really great.
That's a good pick, yeah.
So what's your number four?
Okay, so my number four is probably my favorite sci-fi movie of all time, written and directed by Alex Garland. This is Annihilation. And yes, and there is two distinct points of this ending. So this is the only one that kind of deviates from my criteria, but you have the mimic, weird sort of dance sequence that happens in the lighthouse, you know, foyer. And that is in itself fantastic. Just before that, you have this weird psychedelic sort of, you know, 2001 A Space Odyssey color mind trip sort of thing that you're going through, the characters going through. And that's just a really, again, another really daring sort of ending that the studio, I heard there was a rumor that the studio told Garland to change the ending, and he said no, and they said, we're going to cut your budget in half, and he said fine. And that's how the movie did not get a theatrical release in, you know, a lot of the parts of the world or something like that. So respect to Garland for that, because the ending is really something special, and it makes you think, and there's no clear line of how you're supposed to feel or what actually happens. And then it's got a little tag on the end when Kane and Lena meet each other, and they both have the color changing of the eyes.
Yeah.
And you're like, are they both Kane and Lena? Is it an alien? Are they both aliens? Are they neither, or are they a little bit of each other? And it allows you to stop and digest as the credits are rolling, and you think to yourself, huh, I wonder what that meant. And then you can have a conversation with the people you're watching the movie with and get two different people's perspective, and it leads to a wonderful conversation. So that whole bit from entering of the lighthouse to the very end is just no notes, 100%.
Yeah, I agree. I think I read, I'm not really sure, that the little thing with the color in the eyes was also the studio, that the original idea was not to have any hint of whether or not they were or not were, whatever. But I'm not really sure on that. That's a film that I really should rewatch it. I really liked it, but it's a film that I felt like the urge to dive into back again. And I think that it really deserved a better chance from the audience, because it really didn't do that well.
Yeah, I've probably seen it 6-7 times or something like that. It's amazing. It's really good.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely good. Okay, so for my number four, I'm going to go with The Third Man. Have you seen it?
Nah, it's a blind spot for me. It's been on my watch list for years.
Oh, you should see it. That's another one of my favorite film noirs. The very final scene, I don't think it will spoil.
And I know the plot and the kind of twist to it.
Okay, but again, the ending is, the very last scene is not necessarily that it's going to spoil that much about the film to anyone. But, you know, after whatever happens, the main character, who had been like more or less romantically involved with the main girl, the main female character, in the end, he's waiting for her, leaning against a car in a road, and she's coming from way in the back through this road. And director Carol Reed, he sticks with that shot. She's walking towards the camera, and he sticks with that shot. I don't know how long it lasts, but it's a couple of minutes as she's walking towards the camera. And you're expecting, you know, she's coming to her man and be together. But she just comes and she just walks by him. And it's a great subversion of tropes.
Nice. Yeah.
Where you expect, I mean, you know, things didn't end well, but you still expect that typical studio ending, you know, oh, they're going to be together because love prevails and whatever. But she just walks by him and just goes on forward. And I love the subversion. I love how the director sticks with that shot for whatever long he sticks with it, because he doesn't move the camera.
Yeah.
He only changes the shot when she's really close to him and she doesn't even look at him. And I love his reaction to it, because his reaction isn't even surprise or whatnot. He just knew she wasn't going to stop. And he just likes, well, and gets in the car and goes away. And that's the end of the movie. And I love it. I love that end.
And it's a nice, and it's a really long take. Is that what it is?
Yes. It's like 2 or 3 minutes. So it's not.
Not a long, long take, but
it's not a long, long take, but you know,
three minutes is still long for a moving shot, you know?
Yeah, I really love it. So that's my number four.
All right, cool. All right, my number three. This movie is my favorite body horror movie. A lot of people would say kind of like lean on like The Thing for that, but I like The Fly a little bit better. Jeff Goldblum is a revelation. It's my favorite David Cronenberg movie. And to be honest, it spoiled most other David Cronenberg movies for me because it's a studio movie. You know, it's got the three-act structure. It's got the protagonist, got the villain, you got the wimpy guy on the side. And then it's peppered with the absolute most disgusting gore practical effects that you're ever going to see from 1986. I believe it's 86. And the final act it's just an explosion of everything that you're like waiting. You're like, oh, how far is this guy going to go? Is he really going to turn into an actual fly? And you know how he's already got the puke on this and that. And he's got it's just all the disgusting things come to a head and you get like this memory of this fly head breaking out of the human head of the Grundle fly. And, yeah. And it was burned in my head as a child. It's still there. and the sad part when he merges with like the teleportation thing and he's got the giant metal thing, he's clunking along and he just grabs the shotgun and puts it up to his head with the fly claw. And it's like, I didn't think that hideous creature that I saw 1 minute prior that was making me shout, oh God, what is that thing? It now has the sympathy, you know, now I feel sympathy for it. And I'm like, oh, he's in there. There is a humanity to him and he wants to be put out of his misery. So that juxtaposed with her performance, I think it's is it Gina Gershon?
Gina Davis.
Gina Davis. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Get their names mixed up all the time. And her performance of just like emotionally leaving it all out on the table, it really makes the scene something complete and is very memorable. And then I think that's just it. That's blows his head off. And I think that's the end of the movie. I don't think there's a resolution or anything there.
I don't remember if the other guy comes up or
he's revealed to like not have died, but I don't think that there's like a prologue where they're
I don't think either. I just, she shots and I think she starts crying and I think that's it. I agree.
Yeah, they kind of get together and then that's kind of the end of it. So really just does leaves you with like, holy shit, what did I just watch?
It's a really good call. And that's a film that I also saw, I think, way too young. And I remember my brother, he's a horror freak, and he had a couple of Fangoria magazines that used to explain the whole makeup process and then found it fascinating. But yeah, that's a great scene. And I love how Cronenberg uses it to explore the effects and the impact of terminal illness. He uses this merging of a fly with a human to kind of like compare it to what's the process of going through a terminal illness and with the effect that it has on relatives and loved ones. So I think that's great. And I agree, Gina Davis is excellent in that scene. Yeah. Specifically in that final moment, she really goes.
Yeah, she sells it.
She's definitely out there. So yeah, no, a great call. And I would even bring up the original The Fly from the 50s.
That's iconic.
I think it's also an iconic for different reasons and in a very different way. But I think it's also iconic. And I think it's also very haunting and very, very eerie and creepy.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so my number three, I'm going to go with a film that I defend a lot. And I always go to bat for. And I'm going to go with Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines.
Oh, very, very Carlo pick.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely couldn't talk about closing scenes without talking about this film because this ending, I love the whole film.
Best part of the movie.
I'm a big defender of this film. You can check out an episode I did for Review It Yourself with Sean where I defended the movie and he actually agreed with me. He said, I thought I was going to fight with you when I saw the film and I don't know why people hate this film.
That's funny.
I know that overall, speaking about the film, I know that coming on the heels of Terminator and Terminator 2 was never going to be easy. So I have respect for what Jonathan Mostow, the director, did with this film. He went small scale in a way, and I think it worked. I still have some slight issues with the tone of the film. I think it's a bit jarring how it goes from comedy to... I don't think all the comedic bits mix that well with the whole film. That might be my biggest complaint.
Mm-hmm.
But the ending, I think the ending is one of the ballsiest endings from any film. From the minute they enter that bunker where you think they're going to find Skynet, and then you get this reveal that it isn't actually Skynet, that the Terminator just led them, not the Terminator, the girl's dad, led them there just to save them in the bunker. I think it's a really, it's so eerie when, what's her name? I forget the
I
name of
can't
the wife.
remember. Yeah, I can't remember.
Either way, it's Claire Danes. And when she turns around and she looks the steel of the president of the United States in the conference, you know, that classic 50s bunker style, it's so haunting and so effective. I really loved it. I think it works well. And I think it would have been a great setup for what should have been like the continuation of the franchise. Something that Terminator Salvation kind of tried to do, which was continue onto the future, what comes afterwards, not what Genesis and Dark Fate have tried to do, which is like trying to reboot and reboot and reboot and try to repeat the same and the same.
Yeah.
But I think I think you're going to see this in a lot of my choices. I like bleak endings. I like dark endings. And, you know, this thing that you can't stop, Judgment Day, you can stop it. And we, humanity, are destined to destroy ourselves. And even though they managed to prevent it, they didn't really prevent it. They just postponed it because humanity will always steer things to chaos and destruction and disaster. And I love that bleakness. I love it. So it definitely had to be on my picks.
Nice. Cool.
No words from Pete because he hates it.
I just, the ending where everything blows up and you're like, oh, cool. It was all for nothing. All the puns and the talk to the hand was a waste of my time. Actually, I didn't hate the movie. I'll say that. It wasn't as bad as I was led to believe. I was like, this is pretty fun. But it really, like you said, it pales in comparison to what came before it. So it's like, you can't even grade it like a Terminator movie. It's just its own thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, again, coming after those two great films, it was an impossible job.
Yeah, you're slightly doomed.
Yeah. So I see number three.
I think I'm on number two for me. Okay, so my number two is a movie that I've talked about on a number of our friends' podcasts. I talked about it on your next favorite movie with Josh G. I would consider one of my top two movies of all time is Whiplash, Damien Chazelle's Whiplash. The final scene it has to be experienced. It is just fantastic. And like we said earlier in the beginning of this episode, you know, the culmination of all the characters' decisions up to this moment and the relationship that they've had building this moment together culminates in, instead of like an interesting character turn or whatever, it culminates in like the baddest goddamn drum solo you're ever going to hear, pretty much start to finish. And there's some creative editing with the, you know, the dropping of the sound and what, you know, the slow motion of the rolls, the snare rolls and stuff, and the blood dripping down off the snares. It's juxtaposed with that and then back to the full roar of this multi-piece set just being played to death by Miles Teller's Andrew Niemann. And it's an emotional rush. It gets, my arms are now tingling now thinking about it. And every single time I watch it, my mouth is agape. I'm just watching like, oh, who can do this? And he's a kid and he wants to be the best and he's the best now. You know, it's like all these things together. I know you've seen this before, right, Carlo?
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Okay, great. So there's two moments, there's two things specifically about it. You know, everybody, you know, when you think about it, you think about all the big finale, and then it stops and it like looks at Niemann and it looks at Fletcher and then back at Niemann and it looks back at Fletcher, and just the top of his face, you see his cheeks raise up like he's smiling, and he gives him a little nod, and then he goes, and that's the end of the cuts to black. Credits roll.
Yeah.
That's what most people think about it. But the two things that really stick out to me in this scene is there's a quick shot. It's like a really far wide shot of the stage from the audience. And you see Niemann just going to town, going full. It's in full roll mode, full solo mode near the end of the solo. And it cuts to a reverse shot. And it's his dad, played by Paul Reiser.
Yeah.
And he's left the building almost. He was going to take him home. And he's peeking through the doors from the foyer, looking in. And he sees what his son is actually capable of. And the look on his face is like, I never knew that was possible. I didn't know that was my son could do that. And you also see like the shame in his eyes that he doubted him this whole time. Because the whole movie, his father is basically telling him, well, there's a backup plan. And it's not the end of the world. It's okay. Do you really need this guy's approval? Is it really that important? And he finally sees what his son has been able to accomplish through this strife and this turmoil. And it's only for a quick second. Then it cuts back to where he really gets his appreciation from, which is Fletcher. So that's impressive. But the other thing too, that's really exciting about this is that Buddy Rich, the real life drummer that's brought up multiple times throughout the movie, is an amazing drummer, jazz drummer in its own right. And I'm a huge jazz fan. Played jazz trombone for years, and the actual solos that Buddy Rich performed in real life that are considered some of the greats They took an amalgamation of all those and mashed them together to create this solo for the movie. And there's a moment that is done at the very, very beginning, the first opening scene of the movie. It's just the slow snare drum. And it gets faster and faster. And then the solo happens. And then they go at the end, it does the reverse. You know, it's like it goes full roll all the way down to an instant, you know, simple snare hits, snare drum hits slowly. And then it rolls back up to a full roll. And then it goes back into the solo again. And it's like showing that seems so weird. But what you're doing is you're taking essentially a stick and hitting a piece of skin stretched over a barrel. And you're making one individual strike at a time. And then you, it goes, it shows the audience what they're listening to. And you're like, it's a guy hitting a thing with a stick. And you get all this sound and all this like emotion from it that is really just like deconstructing what you're actually hearing to the most basic components. And they do it in a beautiful way. And then the big roll happens. And then Terrence smiles. And we're going to cut to black. And it's the credits roll. And it's so good. It's the best.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I have thoughts about this one. I love the film and I love the ending. And I think there are so many layers to the character sections all through a film that you can interpret all the things they do in so many ways and so many consequences and so many things you can get out of it. For example, you can say, yeah, this is him finally selling himself to this asshole because Fletcher is an asshole. Or you can say, this is him finally getting the approval that he deserves because he's a great drummer. Or you can say, this is Fletcher giving up to this weaselly kid,
yeah,
who's an entitled or whatever. Or you can say, this is him finally recognizing and acknowledging the talent that this kid has. So I think there are different ways that you can see this. Was the drum solo excessive? Was it really a great showcase? Was it too much? Was it just him trying to overshadow his bandmates? Does the quest to find the next Charlie Parker, yeah.
And Buddy Rich.
Do you really need to go this far to find the next Charlie Parker or whatever? I think there are so many ways that you can unravel this film. And I don't know the right answer. I just enjoy it.
There is no right answer. That's the great part of it.
Exactly.
The answer to every one of those questions you asked is yes. Even the ones that contradict each other, the answer is yes.
but that's what I love about the film. It's so complex and all the complexities and all the characters. I really enjoy that. So it's definitely a great pick that went through my mind and I thought about including it. But I knew.
You knew me, so you knew it was going to be on my list.
Yeah, I was pretty sure you were going to bring it up. Okay, for my number two, I'm going to go with The Heiress. The Heiress is a film from 1949.
All right.
And this is a film that I discovered recently. It was mentioned in one of my previous episodes in 2022, I think, in the Oscars episode that I did. I had the host of a great podcast called The Envelope, Please. And our final loot was best Oscar winning performances.
Okay.
And they mentioned this film, The Heiress, with Olivia de Havilland. And I hadn't seen it, but I thought, you know, let me check it out. And I saw it, and the film is so great. And the ending is one of the best endings, which is why I'm bringing it up now. Olivia de Havilland plays this woman. She's the daughter of a wealthy man, and she has a lot of insecurities. I'm not going to say ugly because she's not ugly, but she's awkward and she's not very socially, she doesn't know how to behave socially. So she's like the source of shame for her wealthy father. Okay. He dismisses her often. And he argues at one point she's never going to get married. She's going to be sucking up to me all her life. But she eventually meets this man played by Montgomery Clift, and they start a relationship. But then he, going to kind of spoil it, but he he ends up betraying her in some way. But then he comes back. But some time has passed, and you have seen the transition in this female character. And you can see that she has grown. And this is not something that happens from one scene to the other. This is something that you see gradually happening, that she starts to gain more confidence as she's seeing how people are taking advantage of her and how people are dismissing her. And this man comes and she receives him and says, okay, come. And they talk and she tells him, okay, we're going to be together. Just go get the car. I'm going to wait for you. And when he comes back, he starts, there's a great moment where she tells her maid to bolt the door. She says, bolt it. And she just locks the door, and the man comes to the door, and he starts just knocking and knocking and knocking. And she just calmly grabs some lamp and goes up her stairs with all the confidence in the world, ignoring this man that's just banging uncontrollably on the door. Just open the door. And she just, and there's a contrast, because there's an early scene where you see her walking up the stairs after some fight she had or something she had with the man. And she's this complete mess of a woman that has no confidence. And you contrast it with this last scene where she's just walking up so triumphantly, so confident, so full of herself. And it's a great scene. It's a great moment. Definitely one of the greatest performances I've seen from an actress. So I'll give credit to the guys from The Envelope Please, Sam and Rance. It's a great film. Definitely a great ending.
Nice. I haven't even heard of it before. I'll add it to my list.
It's a film that is rarely mentioned. I really hadn't seen it mentioned or didn't know about it until they mentioned it. The Heiress from 1949, Olivia de Havilland and Montgomery Clift.
Oh, there it is, 1949.
Yep.
Not streaming anywhere. Well, we'll see about that. It'll be on my watch list until one day the Criterion Channel offers it or something.
Yeah, until you find it in a thrift shop.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Yeah. So what's your number one?
Okay, anybody who knows me knows this is going to be no surprise whatsoever. This is my other favorite movie of all time, which docks back and forth with Whiplash. This is There Will Be Blood. What a fantastic movie.
Yeah.
Start to finish, it's a character piece of Daniel Day-Lewis's character, Daniel Plainview. It's an oil tycoon in the Wild West in, like, I want to say late 1700s or something like that. Nah, 1800s.
1800s, I think.
Yeah, something like that. And it's been parodied a million times. It's the joke, you know, I drink your milkshake, I drink it up. Maybe I am not the most subtle person, you know, maybe my tastes are not subtle, because my last spot for Whiplash, all those questions you were asking, was it too much? Was he overplayed? Was the solo too much? Was he trying to outshadow everybody else, you know, on the stage? And at the same time, was the scene trying to outshadow the rest of the movie? Yes. In There Will Be Blood, the answer again is yes, because Daniel Day-Lewis is completely out to lunch on this, on this performance. It starts, the whole sequence starts with a flash forward. It was 20 years, I think, had passed or something.
More or less,
His son, HW, who was deafened by the explosion on one of the oil rigs, is now an adult. He's got a wife, and he is going into the oil business, and he's coming to tell his dad so. And his response after he tells him, "Dad, I'm going to move to here, and I'm going to get my own rig, and you know we're in love together and stuff." He doesn't even barely look up at his son. He takes a break from signing checks to look at his son while he's smoking a cigarette, and he says, "That makes you my competitor." And at that point, he doesn't have a son. He's no longer his son, even though he never was, you know. And he takes
bastard in a basket.
He takes that moment. "You're just a bastard in a basket." And he even humiliates his son and makes him say it with his own mouth, you know, instead of having his interpreter sign it and then his interpreter speaks it to his father. He makes him say it with his own mouth that he's to starting his own rig. So that's the beginning of it. And the end of it is Eli Sunday, played by the great Paul Dano, coming in with hat in hand, looking for a handout, basically saying, "I'm ready to sell to you, Daniel, Mr. Plainview. If you'll have it, I have all the oil. You've always wanted it, and I've never sold it to you." And that's when he tells him that he basically drilled in from the side, sucked all the oil out from the side. "I have a straw, and your milkshake is way over there. I drink it up." You know, that's the line that people remember. But that entire performance of him chewing on a day-old steak, guzzling vodka in his indoor bowling alley, while he's berating his fly in the ointment for the entire movie, and he finally gets his druthers, and what does he do? He beats him to death with a bowling pin.
Finished.
Yes, and that's the line. The butler comes down and goes, "Is everything all right, sir?" And he just says, "Oh, I'm finished." And then credits roll, music starts playing, and you get no resolution about what happens next, but I guess it really doesn't matter, you know? He's a broken man. He's completely lost his rocker, you know?
Yeah, I had it on my list. My honorable mention, from which I might have picked it up, because it's so great, and that whole sequence is just masterful, and Daniel Day-Lewis' performance is probably one of my top five favorite performances ever, because he's so good. And I want to give credit to Paul Dano, because even though the whole scene belongs to Day-Lewis, I mean, he's the one that's shooting all the scenery. But I think that credit has to be given to Paul Dano about all the film, but also how he managed to held his own opposite Daniel Day-Lewis. Especially he had like, I think it was like a week of preparation or 4 days to prepare, because the role was supposed to be played by someone else.
Yeah.
And they ended up giving it to him. And you know, it's this contrast that Daniel Day-Lewis was preparing for this role for like a year. He was he lived in like somewhere there, the oil place. He talked with people and he did whatever. And Paul Dano just had like 4 days or 5 days to prepare for this role. And he's so good.
I know. I like how Joe Coy used that as an excuse with his Golden Globes speech. He's like, I only got this job 10 days ago. Dude, Paul Dano got the gig 10 days ago and freaking killed it opposite DDL.
Nah, yeah. As a matter of fact, I hadn't heard of who Joe Coy was until yesterday. Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, There Would Be Blood is definitely one of the best endings ever. So yeah.
Had to be at the top of my list. And I guess I said at the beginning of the episode, the intros are more important. First scenes are more important to me. But my two favorite movies of all time are the top two of my closing loot. So maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. You know, I thought I wouldn't go this way, but I'm gonna close it this way.
All right.
And I'm gonna follow your suit and go with my favorite film. So why not?
Oh, all right.
And everybody knows it, so it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. But I'm going to go with the ending to the Shawshank Redemption, the very last scene. And everybody knows that Shawshank Redemption is my favorite film for many reasons. It's a film that hit me personally at the right time when I was a teenager. I still think it's a great film. And that very last scene, I love the whole last 30 minutes or so once we get this big reveal of what happened. And I love all that sequence, but that very last scene, which isn't actually in the novel,
it was
made only for the movie, but I think it's perfect. It's such an example of joy and hope, which is the main theme of the film, in this non-dialogue scene where you finally see these two friends finally meeting together again. It's a scene that always puts a tear in my eye and always puts a smile on my face. And, you know, the film has become like the film's theme of hope and you know, get busy living or get busy dying has become like a sort of a mantra for me, for how I live my life.
Nice.
And that scene is like that encapsulation of all that. And I love it. As we see the Pacific and we see this silhouette, because we don't even see them hugging openly.
It just slides away, that happens.
Yeah. And you barely see them hugging in the distance. But you know it's happening and you have to be happy about them. It's definitely a great scene.
Yeah. I went to Zihuatanejo on my honeymoon actually and did not go to that beach. I don't think that was an option.
Yeah, you told me that in the opening loot episode. And I have a Zihuatanejo shirt. Not today, but I have a Zihuatanejo
shirt. Yeah. Good pick. Yeah. That's a great movie, great final scene. You know, no one can begrudge you for that pick.
Yeah, it's great that in the book, in the novel, there are more references to how red Morgan Freeman's character dreams often of the Pacific, how blue it is and how he sees it. And the film doesn't have that many reference. I think he doesn't even mention it at all until that ending. But when you see it, it kind of hits you, because the ocean looks so blue and the camera focuses so much on that. And when you add that to what I had already read from the novel, it added like an extra weight to that. And it's really
nice. That's cool. Very cool.
So do you have any honorable mentions?
Yeah, I had a couple that didn't quite fit the criteria. There's a double ending sort of thing. You know, Annihilation, I touched on that a little bit. But with The Lighthouse, you have the whole third act is fantastic.
Yeah.
It ramps up. The two characters really reveal themselves to be who they are or were not the whole time. And the scene of Robert Pattinson's character screaming into the abyss that is the lighthouse light.
Yeah.
Was very just haunting. Oh, it's so great. And then he's getting his liver picked away like Prometheus in the fable. Yeah. It's like so cool. So those the two pieces of that puzzle were great. The kid detective has a fantastic reveal that is unbelievable. Like,
I haven't seen it.
You've seen enough movies. You kind of think you know where movies are going, and you're kind of like, oh, there's going to be, you know, the solving of the whatever, because he's solving a murder the whole time. And you get to the end, and it was like legitimately like, whoa, okay, didn't expect that. And then there's another one right on top of it, and you're like, oh my God, what the heck came out of nowhere? And then once it all resolves, there's a little denouement at the end where it kind of like revisits, and it's like, yeah, 6 months later, and here's how his life is going and stuff. And there's a scene with his parents at the very, very end, right before credits roll. And that's just icing on the cake. So I won't say what any of that is, but that's like kind of a double ending. And so that's those two. I have the classics, Fight Club, Return of the King, You Bow for No Man, which is not the ending, but most people consider it the
one of the 10 endings of the film.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Then it cuts got 12. And then what I consider a horror classic, a modern horror classic, Hereditary, is spawned this sort of the trope of the, you know, zoom in on the face of the person who's scarred by what just happened and loud music's playing and there's a fire burning somewhere. And it's like that they did it. They created the mold with that, I think, to some of these modern, quote unquote, elevated horrors or whatever you want to call them. So those ones didn't quite make the list. And then I have some really satisfying endings, but we're not quite the best. Bodies, 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 fantastic final reveal of the fantastic button on the end of the whole thing, which makes the whole movie recontextualize. So great. The Hunt from 2020, last movie I saw in theaters before the pandemic hit. It's got a really wonderful final line from, I think it's Betty, I can't remember her name, Betsy Gorm. Anyways, the main character, she gets to the end of the movie and there's a one line reveal of her sitting in a helicopter and it's so fun. And then The Phantom Thread. It's actually just Phantom Thread, not The Phantom Thread. But yeah, Phantom Thread, when they're eating their final dinner before the credits roll, he says to her, you know, what does he say? He says, take me to before I'm sick.
Yeah, something like that. Oh, I love that movie. Yeah, well, yeah.
And that, again, it recontextualizes the relationship of them that they've built throughout the whole movie. And it makes me laugh every single time. And it is so bizarre. And I freaking love that.
Yeah, I really love that film, definitely. Another great performance from Daniel Day-Lewis.
Oh, yeah, it's true. I didn't think about that. But yeah, you're right. And then I do have movies that had a bad start, but a good ending. You're Next, that's the kind of like home invasion movie. It's kind of slow start.
I saw it last month.
Oh, yeah. Slow start, kind of run of the mill. You're like, it's a kind of low budget. And it ends really good once it gets going and doesn't stop. Cabin in the Woods starts out just like a cheesy sort of horror movie in the woods and just goes to another level.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, The Troll Hunter, the found footage Norwegian movie about trolls. It takes like probably 35, 40 minutes to really get into anything exciting happening. But when it does, it's just like, this is bananas and I like it. And then the final act of Babette's Feast is otherworldly. But the first part of the movie, you're kind of like, what am I doing? Why am I watching this movie? So I love
it. I haven't seen it.
Oh, man. Got to be near the top. It's one of the greatest food movies of all time.
I heard the podcast a couple of weeks ago and somebody mentioned it. And I don't know if it was a Film Vaulters or
I think it was a Film Vaulters. He was assigned it from Joe Bridges, which is who assigned it to me, actually.
Yeah, that's it. And they were speaking highly of it. So yeah, I definitely need to check it out. I had a couple. I had seven, even though the which is my number two favorite film, but the final scene is the whole Morgan Freeman quoting. But you know, the final scene is the quoting scene. You know, Ernest Hemingway once said that, but what comes before is iconic. Mm-hmm. But I said, you know, this is not the actual very last scene, so I'm not gonna
that almost made my list. Yeah, good pick.
Yeah, The Wicker Man, the original one. It has a very haunting, very creepy ending. Have you seen that one?
No, I haven't seen either one of them.
Oh, you need to check it out. The Usual Suspects would probably make my list. You know,
that's a good pick. Yeah, didn't think about that one.
Casablanca, Night of the Living Dead. I mentioned it in the game. Mm-hmm. It's a good one. Chinatown.
Love Chinatown.
Great one. La La Land. You mentioned Whiplash, Damien Chazelle. La La Land has another great ending, which I like. This is not the ending that you expect. Mm-hmm. I saw a film noir recently, which had a very bleak ending, which really surprised me. Chris Cross with Burt Lancaster and Yvonne De Carlo. Okay. Pretty good. Primal Fear with Edward Norton and Richard Gere. Almost made my list. Let's see. Saw. Probably not the best film, but I saw that in theaters and I still remember being, my jaw hit the floor. I was with my best friend and we were both like, what the fuck?
That's one of those movies that in like 50 years, people are going to be looking back at Seven. It's like, if you haven't seen Seven and you don't know the twist, how, you know, if you find that rare friend that doesn't know anything about it, you need to show them that and like record their reaction. Saw is going to be the same thing.
Yeah. Toy Story 3. Which would have been the perfect ending to the whole trilogy. And then Toy Story 4 is better than it had any right to be. But
yeah, I liked 4, but you're right. Do you wish they were all incinerated?
No, I think the ending is perfect.
Okay.
I love the ending. It always makes me cry. I had The Godfather with the door closing on Kay. The Blair Witch Project, final shot, the kid in the
It's iconic,
corner.
yeah.
And I had a couple of ones. Kill Bill one, but not necessarily the final scene, but the whole fight with Orenishi is great. I
Okay,
love
okay.
it. It's probably one of my favorite Tarantino scenes. But
Nice.
it's not the proper ending, so I
Yeah.
decided to leave it out.
Best, the final ending, though, does she know her daughter survived, is one of the greatest modern cliffhangers of all time.
Yeah, it's great. And the ending, the very ending in Kill Bill 2, the whole conversation with Bill, I think it's great. And the fight, it's iconic. So I love it.
Yeah,
Very,
very
very
good.
anticlimactic, very much what you wouldn't expect from this film.
Yeah.
But anyway, as usual, I went and asked on Twitter for people to share their favorite closing scenes on any film. And then this is what I got. Our friend Darren Lumber from Nostalgia Cast, he said, off the top of my head, Casablanca, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, Field of Dreams, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, It's Such a Beautiful Day, The Mist, I should have mentioned The Mist,
Oh yeah, solid.
Raising Arizona, Shawshank Redemption, The Third Man, and Titanic.
Yeah, that's good. Titanic's a good one. I didn't think about Titanic.
Yeah, I like the ending, yeah. Tim Dougherty, he said, I'm going with the ending of John Carpenter's The Thing, MacReady and Childs at the finish line facing off with nothing but a bottle of scotch between them. Possibly one is infected or neither. Paranoia at max. They've either saved humanity or we're doomed. Death awaits. I love that. And definitely
Yeah, good.
one of the best endings. Yeah. Our friend Tom at Death Heaven, he said, Whiplash comes immediately to mind. There are so many great final scenes. Rocky, of course, I am tempted to answer with the good, the bad, and the ugly, and the absolutely iconic final gun battle. The close-ups, the music, perfection. But can that really be called the final scene? Actual final scene. I'm going to say Rocky. What a great love story. And in the end, this man who we've seen struggle with self-worth accomplishes his desire to just go the distance for once in his life as he calls out to the woman he loves without even caring about who won. Adrian! Adrian! That's not
Yo,
the final
Adrian.
scene, but
Very good, yeah.
my friend Luis Martinez at Big Chief Burrito, he said, the ending of Last American Virgin is always my go-to. Bittersweet, perfect, needle drop song, and all that. I hadn't heard of that film, but I read that it had a very downbeat ending that most people love. My friend Todd from Forgotten Films, he said The Planet of the Apes. And I agree. I think that ending, even though you
Good
know it's
pick.
coming because it's something that it's burned in pop culture,
Yeah.
I still find it effective and haunting and eerie.
Great pick, yeah.
And it's not that bad. The podcast, they said Infinity War. I've never heard a full theater so quiet leaving a movie. And I was talking with them on Twitter. I have my issues with the whole Infinity War and the whole thing because we know. We can see that ending and know that it's not going to have any effect or any consequence because we know the snap will be reversed, eventually be reversed. So with that said, I still think the whole film is effective for what a Marvel film could be. I still think it's effective and it works, and you're like, oh wow, they did that, even though you know they're gonna reverse it.
Infinity War is the snap and Endgame is the second one.
Yes.
Okay. They're both blind spots for me. One day I'll watch them.
Okay. Yeah.
You're the first person I've ever heard that said, yeah, you could skip
I
it.
mean, if you're, I've seen most of the MCU films, so I'm into it, but it's not like, have you seen the MCU films or most
It's
of them?
almost every single one leading up to that I saw, and then for whatever reason, I just didn't. I think at that point in my life, I was not seeking out a lot of new releases, so I just skipped it and never went back.
Have you seen? Almost up to that point, I don't see no harm, and you might enjoy the film is good, and both films are good. Like I said, I had issues with Endgame because you know that what happened has no big consequence. You know they're gonna reverse everything, and you know those people that disappear are gonna come back.
But what if
And
they don't, Carlo? What if they don't?
who knows?
I
Oh my
know.
God, consequences.
I just watched Air, the Ben Affleck directed movie that came out last year, and you know exactly how it's going to end. But the whole time, I'm like, oh my gosh, are they going to get the
Well, you
contract?
know, there are films that have that, and I don't want to deviate too much, but there are films that have that magic because, you know, have you seen Valkyrie?
No.
A Bryan Singer film about the whole trying to kill Hitler. And you know how it ends because you know that Hitler survived. But you still, it's one of the most tense movies I've
Yeah.
seen. It's all the whole, we're about to do this. It's very, very tense. So yeah, that there's a certain skill
Yeah.
in putting tension in something that you already know how it's going to end.
Sure, yeah.
But you might check it. And I really like the opening act of Endgame. where you see these characters dealing with the trauma of what has happened.
I'll watch it one day. And we're going to make once, a deal on the show, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, Brian Clarkson, he said, when the pieces start to come together at the end of The Usual Suspects. And my friend Sylvie at Sly_Wit, she said the heiress, Stalker, Manon the Source, Phoenix, and First Cow. Phoenix is one that I had on my list. She recommended it to me, and I saw it a couple of years ago. And that's I think it's a German film about this woman that survives a concentration camp. She's shot in the face, but she still survives, and Jesus. She undergoes surgery. So she doesn't look, she's not disfigured, but she doesn't look how she looked. And she realizes that maybe her boyfriend is the one that betrayed her. Mm. And that's how she ended up in the concentration camp. So she starts following him. Mm. And because she doesn't look the way she looked, he doesn't know. Mm-hmm. And they start this relationship, and how it ends. It's a really, really, the ending is quite a kicker. It's really good.
Cool. Adding that too.
Yeah. So, Pete, it's time to finally close the door on 2023 officially. Pete, why don't you tell us what's in store for the Middle Class Film Class podcast this year?
So this year, like I said, we're focusing on the YouTube channel. So we're doing a lot of interesting things. We're taking chances with it and experimenting with different things and trying to follow some of the YouTube trends, but also still be true to our own, you know, sensibilities and not just doing it because, that guy's doing it and he's getting a bunch of views, you know? So we're trying to do fun stuff and also have fun together. So, you know, just look us up on all your podcast streaming services. Middle Class Film Class is the name. If you go on YouTube, you're going to find the same thing. And just give us a shot. If you like banter and conversational sort of podcasts, that's what you're going to get. And we have, we probably put out too much content, so it can be intimidating. So if you like to binge listen to stuff and you're like, I want something new that I could download the whole back catalog, we're on like episode 370 now, and each one of them is at least an hour long. So there's a lot to listen to if you want to try something new.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to include all the links to your podcast and the YouTube channel on the episode description. I just subscribed to your YouTube channel. So I just subscribe. I'm going to check out your content at some point.
Yeah,
so
give me an honest feedback. If we seem like douchebags, you can say so. It's totally fine.
Oh, dish this man. This sucks.
Ooh, I'm like, who is this? TML, FIFA, what the hell?
I'll let you know. Pete, it's been great to talk with you again. Let's hope we're not closing the door for more opportunities to collaborate.
Absolutely, buddy. Yeah, anytime.
Okay, so we're finally closing the door then officially on 2023. So we hope to see you in 2024, where we're going to have more great loots for everybody. So keep looting.
Have a good night.
So that was it for our closing loot. Once again, I want to thank Pete for his time and the great discussion. The links to the Middle Class Film Class podcast will be in the episode description, so make sure you check them out. I definitely recommend it. If you want to let us know what you thought of the episode, our loot, or any other film we talk about, just reach out to us on social media. I am on Twitter and Blue Sky at TeepCGT, and the podcast is on Twitter at TMML2021 and Blue Sky at The Movie. So after this insightful conversation, I think there's no better way to close out the episode and the year than this.